Welcome to this week's edition of By the Book. I want to thank our friends at Curran Publishers. We have another fascinating conversation for you this week. Izzy Pludwinski is with us via telephone. He is responsible for the brand new book entitled Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy. Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy is a comprehensive and beautiful guide to the art of Hebrew lettermaking, developed and designed by the leading Jerusalem calligrapher Izzy Pludwinski. It teaches the how-tos of writing Hebrew scripts and principles of design and layout to enable you to create your own beautiful Hebrew text. Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy is the essential guidebook that addresses every nuance of the art of Hebrew calligraphic writing, from needed tools, pens, to computers, to correct posture and effective letter spacing. It is also a celebration of the Hebrew letter, with dozens of images of calligraphic works of art that will inspire you to develop your artistic imagination through the Aleph-Bet, a magnificent and informative book to own whether you plan on becoming a professional calligrapher or simply to find joy in Hebrew letters. It has over 200 illustrations. I have examined this book closely. It is a good one. Izzy Pludwinski is widely considered one of the top calligraphers in Israel. His unique designs reflect his view that one can create interesting ketubot and other works of art solely through pure calligraphy. Beginning his writing career as a sofer stam, his creative challenge lies in finding ever new forms for the Hebrew alphabet, a path that has led him anywhere from traditional Judaica to abstract Hebrew calligraphy and even font development. Izzy's works have been selected many times in the judged annual competitions of the prestigious Letter Arts Review, and his book Song of Songs has been purchased by the likes of the Museum of Modern Art, the Library of Congress, and the Judaica Division of the New York Public Library. In addition to his own designs, he also does the calligraphy for many of Israel's top Judaica artists, and he was the calligrapher for the Jerusalem Haggadah and the Moriah Haggadah. He was born in New York. He lives in Jerusalem. He is Izzy Pludwinski. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Oh, thank you for welcoming me.
A pleasure. Not to offer any publicity for your competition or colleagues, but is this the first of its kind? Has anybody else gone ahead ever to put together this type of work?
Well, actually, that was my initial motivation for writing the book. Once I was introduced to the wider world of calligraphy outside of Hebrew calligraphy, I went to study in London for a few years, and I was exposed to what was coming out in the books on English calligraphy, Japanese calligraphy, Arabic calligraphy, and I saw what was available in Hebrew calligraphy, and really there were two kinds of books out there. There were these smaller pamphlets, which were of good quality, but they were a bit dated, to put it mildly. And on the other hand, there were some comprehensive books, but personally, I didn't feel the quality was right up there, certainly not on the level of the other books on calligraphy, on English calligraphy, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And I felt Hebrew calligraphy needed, just out of respect for Hebrew calligraphy, it needed a good comprehensive book that showed all the possibilities that can be expressed through Hebrew calligraphy, and that I think was lacking at the time.
You know, it's funny because Hebrew, to many of us, and I'm not speaking in a calligraphic sense, obviously, is known as a pretty simple language. But when it comes to the artwork of the language of Hebrew, it's a lot more complicated than the average layperson thinks.
Well, as any craft is or any art is, one does need a certain amount of skill and training in it. But the truth is, Hebrew calligraphy wasn't used much as an art form, certainly when compared with the way Arabic calligraphy is used, or Japanese calligraphy is, where they're actual artworks of calligraphy. Hebrew calligraphy has been more or less very practical oriented. I mean, we have the entire, of course, scribal tradition of the Sofer Stam. It was used to write books. So legibility, simplicity, and beauty were important characteristics that went into Hebrew calligraphy, but it wasn't so much used as an art form.
Understood. So even in that area, there's more of a simplistic approach to it. Silly question, but hey, you know, I'm the one who's supposed to be asking those. Must one have some type of artistic ability to even think about pursuing what you've written about?
Well, if you were to see me try to draw something, you would know that the answer to that.
I can't believe it. Is that a fact? You're not in fact one of those great doodlers?
Well, doodling maybe, but nothing that one would hang outside of a refrigerator door, let's put it that way. I came into calligraphy not through any artistic background. I actually came in religiously through a fascination with the Hebrew Torah script. And I can get into that whole story if you want to. But the point I want to make is what really needs is a certain passion and desire to practice. And I think if one has that, then anybody can become a calligrapher.
So it's mutually exclusive. If you put 100 Sofrei Stam in a room, you wouldn't be shocked if half of them really did have no artistic ability.
I would not be shocked. Using myself as an example.
I understand. So then, if that's the case, this book essentially is for everyone. In other words, if anybody has any type of desire or passion to become somebody who can write Hebrew letters beautifully and maybe get to the point where they'd be able to graduate to be a sofer or something else in this industry, I mean, it's really for everybody. Anybody can go ahead and step-by-step pick this up.
Yes, one can do that, and one would also. Well, I would say that it would be true for any art. It's often said these days that no one is really born an artist. You know, it's something that can be learned. Creativity is something that can be learned. It's a way of looking at things that training helps you become that. So calligraphy would not be any different in that respect.
Right.
I just want to make a clarification, just
sure.
In case I don't want people to get the wrong impression. The book would not teach someone how to be a Sofer Stam.
I didn't mean to make that point. Right. But
I do mention. I mean, there is a chapter on the art of the Sofer.
Right. But you'd have to admit that the skills one could pick up, or the practices that one could pick up from this book, might help them along that road.
I should hope so.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I wrote the book.
So we're not giving out degrees, but we are or doing a you know, a self-taught sofer course. But there's no question that these skills would be useful.
We'll put you on the path.
Right.
We'll put you solidly on the path.
Izzy Pludwinski with us via telephone. Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy is the name of the book. Go to Toby Press. Information at the Toby Press for information on Hebrew calligraphy and the book in general. You can go to impwriter.com. That's impwriter.com. Toby Press, of course, an imprint of our friends at Koren Publications. You know, it's funny because, again, the misconception or whatever, you know, the exaggeration, whatever you want to call it, in terms of the simplicity or not the simplicity of the Hebrew letters in general, the steps that are required, and I'm looking at page 9 of the book, the steps that are required or the nuances, the individual categories that are required to be understood in order to form one letter, from body height to roof of the letter to the head, the arm, the leg, et cetera, all of those I don't think the average person would ever think that there's that much that goes into writing a letter or learning how to do it perfectly.
That's probably true, but it makes sense. I mean, before you start any craft, you just have to learn a certain, you know, the basic terms.
Right.
I mean, the roof of the letter is just the top horizontal stroke of the letter.
Right.
And we are familiar with, especially these days, it's interesting that, you know, even though calligraphy itself is undergoing a certain transformation, specifically due to the computer and digital age, So on the one hand, calligraphy has taken a sort of a backstage as far as what people are doing with letters and fonts, which is now much more widespread. Many more people now are aware of the word font and the different fonts and everything like that. So they are becoming more aware of the different parts of a letter and what makes different fonts differently.
Right.
What makes different fonts unique.
Right.
So those aspects are coming into a certain type of consciousness. I don't think it would be so strange for people to see how a letter is built up.
Do computers draw or write letters just as well as humans?
Well, let's put it this way. Fonts, this is I found it a funny misconception when, because one of the things I've done is develop fonts, and people ask, when I say this, people ask me, what do you mean you develop fonts? The fonts come in the computer.
Yeah.
But no one asked, you know, how did that font get into the computer and who designed the font? Sometimes we're not even aware that the people's names are behind the font. I mean, any people who use, you know, Hebrew fonts, just about everyone would know the name David, right? The David font, the David font.
Right.
But someone designed that font, a very famous calligrapher and graphic designer named Itamar David, or
right.
Itamar David, who Israeli-born but lived in New York and worked as a top-end graphic designer, calligrapher, illustrator, letterer in New York.
What happens when one designs a font? Do they get a patent or do they get some type of recognition?
Well, ideally, yes. Unfortunately, when fonts started to become digitally produced, the courts were very, very lenient, let's say, to allowing copying. In other words,
right.
People would take a font that someone might have worked at the time, months, years, maybe even, to design the font and makes one small little change, and the courts would say, okay, this is now something completely different.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, what was the original question?
No, I want to know if you need a patent or if you're granted
Yes, so fonts can be copyrighted.
Right.
In fact, there's been quite a few cases with Microsoft against certain Hebrew Israeli type designers, specifically behind the Ariel font, Hadassah font. It's not a simple matter.
So is there a font that you could proudly take credit for or not?
Yes. In fact, when I produced the first font, which was entitled Sheer, I was concerned about it being copied, so I licensed it. There are font companies, font studios, that sell fonts, right? Because certainly if you're a graphic designer, you want a wider repertoire than what would come automatically in your Mac or you're in your Windows PC.
Right.
So you would turn to a font studio and buy a font. So the font studio, it's in their interest to
regulate,
make sure that
right.
nobody is stealing fonts and nobody is playing around with your fonts, and your name is attached to that font and it is copyrighted.
Izzy Pludwinski is with us, mastering Hebrew calligraphy. What is the most fascinating Hebrew letter, in your opinion?
You know, I worked hard in order not to be able to answer that question.
There's no letter that's most fascinating to you. That's just that it's just got a personality that you've never gotten over.
You know, I
give me one.
To say Shin, but I'll be honest, I have a certain affinity to what might sound like a very simple letter, the Gimel. There is a certain balance. There's a certain way that I look at that letter, and there's a way I think I can make it alive, and I enjoy writing a gimel.
And it's really easy to mess up a gimel, right?
Well, balance is important. You know, let's put it right. You know, yeah, it's one of those two-legged things that have to. It's very easy to have it topple over. It's also very easy to make it. I don't know what the word would be. Inelegant, if there's such a word.
Yeah, too sturdy. Right,
something like that.
Where that extra line is where the side line is a little too long.
Especially in the Torah script, I find there's a lot of inelegance in many of the things I see.
What's the best pen out there for calligraphy?
The quill, the Turkey quill.
You're serious?
Hands down.
You're serious?
Serious.
The feather from a turkey.
A feather from a turkey. I was somewhat maybe a goose, but yes, I use turkey quills. And there's no metal pen out there that can match its sharpness on the one hand. But more important, you can cut it, you can carve it to suit your hand perfectly. Whereas if you buy a metal pen, it's a standard metalized pen.
Does someone like you spend a lot of time carving quills to fit your hand perfectly?
It doesn't take a lot of time. It does not take a lot of time.
And once it's done, it's done.
5 minutes, you can do it.
And once it's done, it's done. No adjustments necessary.
Oh, sure. No, well, no, it has to be sharpened. You have to constantly sharpen it. But that might require, you know,
does the end of the quill play a role in terms of volume of ink that is used when you dip that quill in the ink?
Two things would affect that, but let's say the major one would be the slit. There's a slit coming down more or less the middle of the edge of the nib, edge of the quill, and you can control things by the length of the slit.
You have this down to a science.
It's something that every sophet would know. It's not just me.
You write about paper. Which is the easiest surface to write on? If you're told to, I don't know, do an artistic piece for a ketubah or something else, and you know, obviously in calligraphic fashion, you'd prefer to draw it on what type of surface?
Well, there's two ways I can answer that question. I think it's not so much a matter of ease, but it's a matter of finding the right combination for your specific purpose. And for certain purposes, I would want a rough paper and have non-smooth edges and maybe even the ink, skipping over a certain part. And that will give a certain feel, a certain energy. Right. For certain things, I'd want a very smooth, easygoing thing. But if I have to say, there's the experience of using a turkey quill and sofer ink and properly prepared parchment, that is I can only call it a sensual experience that nothing compares to it calligraphically.
Only someone like you would appreciate it.
No, that's my point.
Meaning,
I want everyone to appreciate it.
Meaning it can be meaningful even to me.
Yes, you would enjoy it.
And you mentioned sofer ink. You write a whole thing here about ink. What is sofer ink? How would you translate it or apply it?
Well, it's a bit different than commercial inks in that, first of all, it's a bit more viscous. So it has body to it. It would sit, you know, it's almost tangible. If you'd run your hands over it, you'd feel it lying on top of the parchment rather than just sinking into the paper. It also has a very nice smell. It shines. It's not everybody's aesthetic. Certainly people outside of the Jewish world, when I worked on a certain project and I wanted to use sofer ink and they saw the shininess, it was very, no. But the actual writing of it, because the parchment just grabs onto it and you get this sharpness that, for me, is very exciting.
And that's why the Baal Koreh would prefer it, because it has that, it leaps off the page a bit more, right?
Yes, right. Possibly, yes.
And I know that this is not our discussion because we're not here to discuss tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, but just out of curiosity, is there a halachic requirement about what ink is used for a Torah, or does a sofer have a choice?
Well, yes, you do have a choice, and there have been different ingredients throughout the ages. The Rambam actually, his only requirement really is that it's black and that it needs the possibility to be erased.
Ah, that it has to have that ability.
There's many machlokot over what ingredients is allowed. There's been changes over the ages, but it's not as simple.
And how priceless are pencils in your profession?
Well, I need to. I use them for, well, not now when I'm writing sofrut, but I'm always. Lining the paper.
Right, so there's no way you cannot pursue writing a ketubah without penciling everything first.
Well, I would say yes and no, because I'm thinking now of the very informal ketubot that were written, let's say, in Yemen.
Right, I understand.
Things which are very informal. They're beautiful, and they're written, and they're not straight, and they have a charm of their own.
Understood. But in terms of the work that you're being asked to do these days, you'd have no choice.
I'd have no choice. But unlike other times, remember, Hebrew is really only line up the top line. The letters hang down from the line just as they would in the mezuzah,
right,
or sefer Torah. You don't... a skilled sewfish should not need two lines. Now they're actually producing, I'm seeing, and I'm a bit disappointed, the parchment makers are producing, you know, when you buy parchment, let's say for a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, or Mezuzah.
Pre-lined?
They come pre-lined.
Oh, my God.
And in the old days, it was only a top line, but now I'm seeing maybe sewfrim are getting lazy. I don't know. They're also scoring a bottom line.
Oh, that's progress, huh? Not always a nice thing.
No.
You talk about advantages that lefties have. Is that in Hebrew, English, or both?
Well, not in English.
Only in Hebrew.
In Hebrew, let me just get my... But this is a bit hard because lefties have a problem, let's put it that way, and it's because of the angle of the pen. I'm talking about these sofer scripts.
Correct.
It would require a very twist. In other words, if you put your hand naturally on the page, you would get an opposite angle of what you would normally need.
Correct.
So the lefty has to get around this. And I give a few different demonstrations of a few different hand positions.
Yeah, by the way, when I was in high school with lefty classmates, it's very similar to the way you demonstrated. They always had that
hook.
Yeah, exactly, the hook where it looked like their wrist was surrounding the top of the page.
Right.
We never had that as righties. We would just write straight, so to speak.
Right. So it's not really one of the preferred positions because then you're writing the letter backwards. You're writing it from bottom to up.
Right.
It's not a natural progression of how a letter would grow organically.
And often they're unlike righties who keep the page straight, often lefties would have to actually adjust the page also, right, to their style of writing.
Exactly. If you'd see how I'm writing now, I'm writing actually an entire chumash, which is together with this artist, Avner Moria. We're working on an illuminated entire chumash, and I'm writing the entire, because I'm not using the Torah script, I'm actually writing the whole thing sideways. It looks a bit funny.
Oh, wait, so you're a lefty?
I'm a lefty, yeah.
We've always been told that lefties have more artistic ability. If we again had those proverbial 100 calligraphers in a room, would the majority be left-handed?
No, definitely
but,
not.
But certainly a larger percentage in regular society, correct?
I would have to do a survey, and I don't
know. I love it. We're listening to a conversation with Izzy Pludwinski. Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy is the name of the book. I remind you that our friends at Koren Publishers have a commuter special. You can bring the Beit HaMikdash to life by studying Meseches Yoma in color. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli. Get a free digital edition. The digital edition is compatible on all mobile devices, including iPod, tablet, iPad, and more. The package has a $60 value for each volume. It is perfect for your commute to work. You go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com, and use the promo code JM in the AM at checkout. Information, tobypress.com, which is an imprint of Koren. And for more information on Hebrew calligraphy and this specific book, Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy, you can go to impwriter.com. That's impwriter.com. Izzy Pludwinski is with us via telephone. We mentioned in your bio about some of the things you've pursued, and you just brought up the Moria Chumash. What is a Jerusalem Haggadah and a Moria Haggadah?
Okay. These are, I'd call them special Haggadot. First of all, their size is
enormous?
Yes, quite large. I would say collectors of Haggadot, or just people who would appreciate a work of art in book form would be interested in it. The Jerusalem Haggadah came out actually at the 3,000-year, for Yerushalayim, it was a millennium, whatever they called it, and all the illustrations in the book done by artist Yael Hirschberg contain elements of Jerusalem architectural motifs. They're all taken from buildings, actual buildings of Yerushalayim. And there's a companion volume which would have the photographs of the actual buildings, and you see the page and how the artist took the motif from that specific building. The Moriah Haggadah is very different in that it's produced differently by Giclée. A Giclée method, digital color method. It's And the motifs there are taken, the illustrations are taken from cave paintings in Egypt and Sudan. Very, very different styles, but very, very special Haggadot.
I'm looking at a page, I assume, or a section. On page 50 of your book, you have a section of the Moriah Haggadah. So the images that I'm looking at, I mean, the calligraphy is beautiful and fascinating. And that font is called, what do we call that font?
Well, it's I'd call it a modernized Sephardi script.
The images are, one more time, the images that I'm looking at, not the calligraphy, but the actual, I don't know, what we'd call photographs or drawings. Those
the artist said they're taken from cave paintings from Sudan and from Egypt, which makes the connection with the, to the Yetziat Mitzrayim.
You know, it's funny, during this segment, as we talk about Talmud, as we talk about the Torah, as we talk about, certainly when we spoke about the Sidurim a few weeks ago, we're always talking about the differences between Ashkenazic and Sephardic. And in this case, you have different chapters on Ashkenazic script and Sephardic script. What would be the essential differences if in fact they're few enough to tell us?
Well, one of the things that differentiate different fonts is the relationship between horizontal strokes and vertical strokes. The Ashkenazic script has extreme contrasts, where the very, very thick horizontal strokes and very, very thin vertical strokes. The Sephardic script will be more even-tempered when comparing the two. That's one way to differentiate. And this difference also appears in the Torah script. That same.
Difference. Would I be able to read a Sephardi Sefer Torah?
For sure.
Even if I'm used to the Ashkenazic script, it's in no way that vastly different.
In no way, because most Hebrew fonts actually are based more on Sephardi forms than Ashkenazic forms.
Right.
Because it's easier to read when you have less of that contrast.
When people turn to a calligrapher, let's say for a ketubah or for a piece that a husband wants to make for a wife with a special pasuk, whatever the case may be, so you're dependent upon for the entire design, correct? In other words, someone may come up to you with a concept, but whether it's, I don't know, adding color or certain backgrounds or the layout and design of the way that piece should look, is the customer generally relying on you for all that?
Yes. Part of the process and a good part of what I've put into the book has to do with composition and design.
Because generally people don't realize what, how creative they can be or how different, you know, one piece could be from another. What are we trying to tell people in chapters like that? How diverse one can be in presenting their calligraphic work?
Right. In other words, you have to make your piece interesting.
Right.
That can come as a result of looking closely at the text and finding out what parts might be more important to the client, what parts would be emphasized, what parts you might want in color, what does the general feel of the composition? Is it going to be a very symmetrical composition, or is something going to fly out and capture the attention right away and have it completely asymmetric? Will illustration be incorporated or not? So I personally, as I said in the beginning, I cannot draw to save my life, but I work with many artists,
right.
So that can be incorporated too.
So are there calligraphers, therefore, who are known to be black and white calligraphers, and others known to use colors really well, and others known to be very simple, and others very complicated? I mean, I would guess that categorically, we've discovered many different types of artists in these areas.
Right. I would say that every calligrapher would have a familiarity with using color and composition. But on the other hand, each calligrapher has their own style.
Right. When you, and I don't know if you have the book in front of you, but I'm in the early 120s in terms of where I'm asking this question. Are there some calligraphers that don't like when it gets too shticky? when it's difficult, when one does a calligraphic work, but it's really hard for people to read it, or the highest level of shtick maybe, where, you know, people do drawings with letters too small or impossible to read. Is that frustrating to some, or it's just simply someone else's style?
I'm not sure what you mean by shtick there. how you're using the word.
Well, I think that in some cases a calligrapher will draw something or present text in a way where it's obvious that they want it read, that people can tell what's going on here. If you look, for instance, at page 122 of your book, there's certain pieces that are just hard to read, that seem not likely to be, you know, desirous of the calligrapher to have it read, but more just to be enjoyed as an artistic piece.
Yes, that is true. That has become an interesting question, again, throughout the ages. What is the role of the calligrapher? And as I mentioned before, that has changed immensely. Whereas before, when calligraphy was used as a main tool of communication, of communicating letters and words and meaning and text, then for sure legibility was of the utmost importance. As technology has developed, as typography has developed, and today as the computer has developed, the calligrapher really finds himself in a quandary. What is my role anymore? If the purpose is just to communicate a text, then set it in type. Set it in, you know.
Right.
Set it in 18-point David, and we're finished.
Right.
Let me just add one more thing. And certain texts are already so well known,
right,
that legibility. You want to do something more with the text than just say, here, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Here, Im Eina Nili Mili. These are things that have gone over and over. And the people who would receive, who would order this, or if it's one given as a gift, they don't need to see the words every day. They know what it is. They want to be moved on a different level, on an emotional level. And that's where I'd say modern calligraphy is more going in that direction. To hit on different levels rather than just on the rational communication of this is what the words say.
Understood. How long has the book been out?
The book has been out a year and a half.
Have you gotten a lot of interesting reaction?
I have. And the most heartening part is saying, I never knew calligraphy can do this.
I never knew
such a thing existed.
I'm telling you, before I picked this up, I considered myself a layman. Now I consider myself a layman plus a little bit. I know that obviously when it comes to holy text, it's a major issue when a biblical text is found. I mean, we know about the Cairo Geniza and so many other things, you know, and we look at things. When something is found from another century that's not necessarily holy or part of a text that was written, but it's simply a calligraphic work, I don't know, a wedding invitation or a ketubah or, you know, something that would not be considered, something that's from a holy book. Do we learn a lot regarding that period of time simply from a piece like that, the same way we do when a holy, you know, a piece of a text is discovered?
I think one of the interesting things one finds, let's say, in letters that people have written is the close relationship between the way Hebrew is written, the way it's expressed, the forms that the Hebrew letters take, and what's going on in the outside culture. So if you can compare letters written in Germany or letters written in the Arabic countries, you find letters written in Italy, you find a very, very strong influence on Hebrew. How it is affected by the outside culture.
Right.
I think that's one of the things one can learn.
It has a certain place in history that is discovered through the work, is discovered through, or I should say, is affirmed through the the discovery of a certain calligraphic form, I guess you would say. You have on page 143 a fascinating questionnaire. I guess this is what happens when you how many years have you been doing ketubot? How many years is it?
It's over 30 years.
So once you're doing a ketubah for over 30 years, you learn what mistakes got to be taken care of immediately, right? And this is an amazing guide for a young person who's just going into this because you're taking care of a lot of things. I mean, there are certain questions that need to be asked, which, again, only experience can give you. Are the parents alive? Are there any Kohanim or Leviim? The text of the ketubah, which I guess varies all across the board, right? I mean, even exclusively in Orthodox Judaism, don't we have multiple texts for a ketubah?
You'll have to have multiple texts because there is no one standardized spelling for just about, I don't know about every word, but I'd say most of the words, there's no standardized spellings. There are ways, I mean, first of all, because there's no nikud, then they have the question of ktiv male or ktiv chaser.
Right.
What one rabbi will demand, the other one will be posel. That's about all the text that already is. That refers to everything that is standardized. Then you have all the new information that has to come in. The city. How are you going to spell the city? How are you going to spell the last name? Do you include nicknames? Do you include this and that? About every single point, every single rabbi will have a different opinion, and that's what drives us crazy. That's why I have so many gray hairs.
I can only imagine. It's like when a script is handed to me to read, and those last-minute changes, they really mean to write that? Does that word belong there, et cetera, et cetera? One of the, I don't want to say funniest, because nothing about the wedding ceremony is funny, but one of the cutest aspects of the wedding ceremony, in my opinion, is if you're in an interesting place, which sounds interesting in the Hebrew language. For instance, when they say in the ksuva, you know, Bronx, New York, you know, and you see the way it's written. There's a uniqueness to that, obviously, because Bronx is not normally spelled in the Hebrew language for any reason. There is no Bronx in Israel, so to speak.
Right.
So you've done this now more than 30 years. Which was the one that was the most challenging in terms of figuring out how to spell a certain place where the wedding was happening?
Well, that's the thing. I would not do that. I've just learned my lesson, and I know whatever I come up with is not going to be what the rabbi wants anyway, and he's going to change it.
So I
would not write any text without asking the rabbi first, how do you want this spelled? I mean, the word like New Jersey can drive. I mean, I've never seen so many spellings for the word New Jersey. It just goes on and on and on and on, and you think you've covered it all, and nope.
That's great.
Never thought of that one.
And in general, and I'm trying to think back to ksuvas. In general, we do put the country in? Do we put the country in or not? Oh, the state.
It's what they used to do was the continent. That's changed a little bit. It used to be in the Medinat, America, Tzfonit. That used to be a standard. That's appearing less and less, actually.
Oh, but you still come across rabbis who would insist the continent be written?
For sure.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that or heard it, I should say.
It's there.
You also mentioned that for Cheshvan, often it should be Mar Cheshvan. For Av, it should be I would think it should always be Mar Cheshvan and Menachem Av. It's not the case? Some will say...
No, why would you say that?
I don't know. Like Chaf Bet Av. I don't think I've ever heard that. I think I've always heard Chaf Bet Menachem Av. No?
In Israel, no. In Israel, I'd say no. The answer is definitely...
Hey,
yes, yes.
You know this more than I do, and I see just how many different nuances you have to worry about. Even the year, there are people who refer to the year in different ways.
No, the year is actually, I think we can morally. Even there. Vishivim v'sheva, vishivim v'arba, or shivim v'arba. Are you going to include the vav or not include the vav?
So
Shlosha, let's say it's shalot. Vav, k'tiv male, k'tiv chaser.
And even though I believe when it comes to a get, it is something that people are very careful about, when it comes to a wedding ketubah, I don't think nicknames are ever included. Or again, am I wrong on this?
Again, you're wrong on this. I just had one now. Hamachuneh ze, and then the ben, and then the father. Hamachuneh ze,
Well, I hope I'm married because back then I was known as Stretch Siegel, and I don't think it made it into the Ksuva, frankly. So
no, then they'd have a whole DUN about how to spell stretch.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine? That's right. Oh, boy, I'll tell you. We are speaking with Izzy Pludwinski, our final minutes on the book entitled Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy. It is a fascinating work, and as we discovered many minutes ago at the beginning of this conversation, it's not just for those who are heavy into the calligraphic arena. It's those who want to pursue it or think about it or just learn about it or see what you need and how it works and all of that. It's really a fascinating book. Unprecedented, right, Izzy? Unprecedented in its...
There are books out there. There are books out there. This is certainly the most up-to-date.
And it really is fascinating. And in the comparison you made earlier to other languages, I emphasized the simplicity, or what we're always told is how simple, you know, Hebrew is compared to other languages. And I would think, because you mentioned earlier, you mentioned Japan, you mentioned other languages. I would think because of the elaborate calligraphic manner that the language appears in its simplest form, right? Chinese, Japanese, it looks to us, or at least to me, mm-hmm. like it's got calligraphy without even being calligraphy. You know,
exactly. Calligraphy is considered one of the arts there. It's not much different than painting and even poetry, actually.
So what do they do? Do they elaborate on that? In other words, my point being that certain languages, the calligraphic pursuit is much more complicated than Hebrew, or am I wrong about that?
Well, even within the Orient, the Far Eastern tradition, there is also a continuum, I'd say, from legibility to more cursive and more running scripts, which are even illegible to the Japanese, Chinese, or whatever. So there, too, it's becoming more an art form, as opposed to just being a very legible way of communicating text.
Understood. And are there certain designs that to you are simply, you know, hands off? I mean, do you ever say to yourself when you've seen other ketubot, you know, how is it that a ketubot whose theme, of course, is unity, wedding, love, etc., how could it be that the artist, you know, made it in this form or had this theme? Or if somebody, I don't know, is drawing Anila Dodi or, you know, in other words, do you sometimes wonder how a certain design can be used? Maybe the calligrapher didn't exactly understand the pasuk or realize that, you know, the theme of the pasuk is a lot different than what they may have thought?
Specifically regarding letter form. Again, if you're doing a serious, very rational piece and you would start to, you know, flourish out of nowhere, or just in a completely different example, people who take Hebrew and they'll try to make it look. I'm not sure I'll be able to actually convey this idea. But you know, add a pagoda-like thing so that the Hebrew looks Chinese, just for effect. In other words, if it's completely out of context, the question always asked is: does it serve the purpose that the calligrapher wants to do?
Right.
Does it serve the text? Does it serve his purpose? And whatever that purpose may be. Now, his purpose might not be my purpose, but if he's true to that, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah, understood. I still wonder if one could produce a, you know, celebratory type scene in a calligraphic and artistic manner for the words Vahisha Amda, for instance, when, you know, when the paragraph is talking about how the world wants to destroy us at every turn. You know, that was my point, but I don't know. I guess there's a lot of calligraphic license out there, right? There's a license to it all fits in somewhere at some point, right?
Yes. Again, before a calligrapher makes these choices, what script to use, what composition to use, the question comes first is what do I want to express?
Right.
What's the most efficient, direct way to do this?
And if they are meeting that goal, then they're being true to it, then they've done what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And if I don't agree with it, that's my business. That's their business. But kol hakavod to them for being true, at least to themselves.
Right, understood. Well, it's been fascinating. Izzy Plodwinski is author of the book Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy. You can check it out. It is a Toby Press release. You can visit impwriter.com, impwriter.com. This gives you the tools necessary, the materials necessary, plenty of information about layout, design, writing a ketubah, a little bit about Sophros as well, and how to get started in this very interesting area of art and Jewish life. In fact, we are going. We are offering to our JM the AM listeners through a contest that we're doing in the morning free copies of Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy, so people have a chance to actually win those from our friends at Koren Publishers. And those of you who have an interest in this area, even a fleeting interest, this book comes highly recommended. I want to thank you very, very much for joining me here today. It's been a fascinating discussion. I hope that you don't find it to be a waste of time to try to teach an average layman something about Hebrew calligraphy.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure on my part, too.
Thank you so much. Izzy Plodwinski speaking to us on Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy here at the Nachum Segal Network. I want to remind everybody there is a commuter special brought to you by our friends at Koren Publishers. You could bring the Beit HaMikdash to life by studying Maseches Yoma in color. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli and get a free digital edition. The digital edition is compatible on all mobile devices, including iPod, tablet, iPad, and more. The package has a value of $60 for each volume. It is perfect for your commute to work. You can go to korenpub.com, K-O-R-E-N, pub.com, and use the promo code JM in the AM at checkout in order to take advantage of that offer. Congratulations to those who have been winning Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy on JM in the AM. We will continue to give those out to our wonderful listeners. And I remind you that the Mastering Hebrew Calligraphy is available. It's a Toby Press release. And information about it, you can go to impwriter.com, impwriter.com for more information. You have been listening to Buy the Book right here at the Nachum Segal Network. In its original form on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on our stream at jmnam.org and nachumsegal.com. My thanks to Izzy Plodwinski and my thanks to our friends at Koren Publishers who give me an opportunity every single week to speak with a fascinating author on fascinating topics. And this week, no exception. Buy the Book, brought to you by Koren Publishers right here at the Nachum Segal Network. Thank you.